corazón se queda aquí. Queda aquí. Esta es mi historia.
Welcome to the Chronicles of Dallas Barrios podcast. This podcast is hosted by the Emerging Historians. We are part of the Dallas Mexican American Historical Week, also known as DEMAL for short. DEMAL, founded in 2008, is a nonprofit focused on researching, collecting, documenting, and preserving Mexican American history in Dallas, Texas. On this season, we will share the lived experiences of BIPOC, meaning Black, Indigenous, and people of color business owners who have been affected by COVID-19 in Dallas, and we will also hear how they are navigating these times. Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoy. Please like, subscribe, and share. My name is Victoria Ferro Ortiz, and today we have Ofelia Faz Garza.
All right. Thank you so much, Ofelia Faz Garza, for joining the Chronicles of Dallas Barrios podcast. If you wouldn't mind, go ahead and say a little blurb or bio telling the listeners about yourself, please.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to be here. It's an honor to be able to share space with you, Victoria, and to be a part of this project. So I'm Ofelia Faz Garza. I was born in Fort Worth. I grew up here in Dallas, in the Oak Cliff area, where I still live. And I'm a product of the ISD schools, the community colleges, the Dallas, Dallas College. And I still live and work in my neighborhood, probably about 10, 15 minutes away from where I grew up. I'm a cultural artist, a writer, a poet, a mom, and sometimes a little bit of a rebel rouser. I think that's it.
I love that. I especially value how you have stayed in your community, you know? So whenever you were growing up, what did you tend to do for fun? What were your favorite activities?
So my mom was kind of one of those, she was a working mom, but had us involved in all kinds of things. So we were very fortunate that, and I don't know how she did it with five kids, working warehouses and still like doing, kind of filling those traditional roles that Mexican women have, and having us in soccer. So I played soccer, we did art classes. We actually, like West Dallas is my second home because we went to church at St. Mary's, and then pretty much during the summer times, we were at Anita Martinez Rec Center. Mm. And so I actually learned to swim at the swimming pool there. And I remember doing like ceramic classes there. And so we just did a lot of things like that. My mom always, también was mi totera and PTA. And so we were always kind of dragged around helping her with her stuff.
Cool. That's really neat. Sports. That was something that I never really got into. And I really wish I had have played soccer. You know, it looks like so much fun, and it's like truly the world sport.
Yeah, I wasn't very good at it, but I liked it. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Same. How do you identify, Ofelia, as far as like race and ethnicity?
So I think if you had asked me when I was younger, it was Mexican. And so I always was Mexican, just because my parents, I'm first generation American, and my parents are from Mexico. They migrated here, and they made a very conscious decision at some point when they started having children that they wanted their children to know who they were and where they came from. And so it was like English outside of the house, you're going to learn that at school, but inside the house, it's Mexican culture. And when I got to college, so my idea of what a Chicana was not very positive. But when I got to college and really started learning more about like what the Chicano movement was, and just kind of really like getting my hands on books written by Chicanx authors and learning about the movement, especially here locally, then that really resonated with me. And so now I'm like Tejana, Tejanx, Chicanx, Mexican. Uh-huh. It kind of just depends, I guess, on what you catch me, but those are primarily the labels that I use.
Yeah, Yeah, I enjoy all of that. I like the Han X one. That's yeah. one I don't hear as much, but I like it because Texas yeah. pride.
Yeah.
So now getting into your artist background and the story there, what art form do you practice?
So I consider it the cultural arts and literary arts is really what I do. I am not by any means like formally trained. My degree was actually in anthropology. And so that's what I always wanted to do, anthropology, work in a museum, because I've always loved the arts and reading and books. And I've always written. I've been writing since I was a kid. But growing up, not seeing authors that look like me, I kind of didn't feel like there was a place for my style of writing. And because I'm bicultural, I code switch when I write. And so I didn't feel like there was a place for me until I read Ansaldúa in college. So when I read Gloria Ansaldúa, I was like, wait a minute. You know, here's an author that's not only speaks like me, but she speaks to me. And so then I started just kind of really sharing my writings a little more and really kind of practicing the cultural arts more too. I think in college, that's when I really felt like the freedom to express who I was. I don't know, it's like all of a sudden, when you learn all of those things, like I had permission to be me. Mm-hmm. And then, so I was doing a lot of the cultural arts. And then actually when I was pregnant with my youngest daughter was when I really started working on writing as my craft. So that she's 8, she'll be 9. So it hasn't actually been that long that I've been like publicly sharing my work and actively like submitting and really kind of trying to engage with the writing community here.
Mm-hmm.
And that I actually started calling myself a writer 9 years ago.
I really appreciate that because I think, and I'm someone who enjoys the arts, but I didn't study it in college either. And so whenever I talk about the things that I do as far as like my activism, I don't tend to call myself an artist, but it's something that I need to reflect on within myself because I mean, I do like make art, but I don't know.
Absolutely.
I tend to like categorize myself as like a hobbyist sometimes because I don't have what I see as the experience that so many of the people that I know that are artists, I see them as artists, but not always myself as an artist.
I had a friend that told us actually when I started, I was like, hey, you know what? I am a writer. She said, you know, if you're writing, you're a writer.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if you're published. It doesn't matter if it looks like what, you know, the publishing world says is writing. If you're writing, you're a writer. And I still have a lot of, I guess, like imposter syndrome over that.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes I'm in spaces where, like I write the way like it feels here and it's pretty much free verse. There's no, I'm not looking at the grammar. I'm not looking at kind of the mechanics of it. And so I still feel sometimes a lot of times, a lot of doubt and a lot of anxiety over that. The first time that I went to a writer's group, so I had gone to a writer's group that a friend started here, some friends started in Oak Cliff, and then that kind of fell by the wayside, and I met some other writers, and I went to a writer's group, and the first meeting that I went to, everybody was fantastic, so friendly and welcoming, and it was a POC group. It was pretty much all Chicanx writers, lovely, lovely group. But I left in tears. I like sat in my car crying and it was like, okay, I don't belong here because these are published writers. These are journalists. These are people who have studied this. And it's like, I don't belong here. So I messaged the organizer afterwards. And I was like, you know, thank you so much for opening the group up to me. And it was a lovely night, but you know, I don't feel like this is for me right now. And he actually teaches at UNT, Dr. Rodriguez, Javier Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. And his response was, you know, that's perfectly fine. If that's how you feel, that's great. But part of being a creative and part of being a writer is being willing to step outside of your comfort zone. He's like, if this is really what you love, and if this is really where your passion is, then at some point you're going to have to step out of that comfort zone. And, you know, this is a safe space for you.
Yeah.
And so I thought about it and I was like, he's absolutely right. And so that was, I think, one of the moments where it was like, okay, no, this is for me. And I probably am going to have to work a little harder at this, especially because I'm such an introvert, and I'm writing is, to begin with, a very private kind of quiet activity that you do, and lots of introspection. And so putting your words out there for the world to see, like bearing your soul, is like the worst feeling in the world. And I'm sure you can relate to that. And but he was absolutely right. And so I try to remember, like, the words of Silvana Avila Alonso is the one that told us, if you're a writer, if you're writing, you're a writer. And so I remember those words often. And then Dr. Javier Rodriguez too, that was like, you're gonna have to step out of your comfort zone and do this, and and just constantly remembering those things, and also remembering that this is part of our fight too, that a lot of us feel like this because the system makes us feel like this, because they haven't valued the work of people that don't have, you know, that endorsement from the university system or from the museum systems or from the publishing companies.
Yeah.
But our voices are just as valid. And so that's part of what I try to do with my work too, is is try to encourage folks to really, like, open themselves up, which is a hard thing to ask people to do, but to share who they are and their vulnerabilities and their strengths too, because the world deserves to hear all of these beautiful and wonderful stories that are out there. And that's why I love what y'all are doing with this project too.
Yeah, we really wanted to highlight artists and businesses. I think you really hit the nail on the head there with the imposter syndrome. It's something that I've felt going into the Arts and Culture Advisory Commission. I'm 26 and I'm the youngest person on there. I'm also one in a handful of people of color. And so that representation, seeing people like you that are doing this work that is so necessary and needed in our times, is just a huge inspiration to me, Ophelia. So thank you for doing what you do. Do you happen to have any nonprofit affiliations?
I don't. That's actually one of the things that I've kind of, COVID has given me the time and the space to kind of sit and really think about the direction that I'm moving in. And so I come from the nonprofit world professionally. I've worked my entire professional life pretty much in nonprofit. And I've seen a lot of issues with it, especially funding wise.
Yeah.
And so I've gone back and forth about whether to organize my work under a nonprofit or whether it deserves to be just a business. Kind of with more of a socially driven business, because I think, like you were saying, for a lot of us that are in the community, I mean, we have to feed our families too. And so it's what we love to do, but it's also our livelihood. And so trying to kind of blend that and figure out how I'm going to do that is kind of where I am right now. So, like, some days, if you ask me, I'm like, yes, I think I am going to do a nonprofit, because unfortunately, people trust nonprofits and they don't trust artists, and I think that's very problematic, because if you have a piece of paper that says, you know, you're sanctioned by the IRS, then you all of a sudden are worthy of receiving funding, and people trust you. If you don't have
these
that,
barriers. Then, right? These barriers that are put in front of us. And sometimes, if, like, even with the English language, I was hearing about how like one of the grant opportunities that the federal government was giving to small businesses wasn't even in Spanish at one point. And I'm just like, so that just eliminates everyone who's a Spanish speaker from being able to apply, or you got to get help and then trust that person that they're giving you the right information and translation.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So it's really difficult. I mean, and then, like I said, I'm a mom. I work out of the house. I help my husband and help like with my parents' healthcare, and so kind of trying to juggle all of that. It, I mean, those like our reality where
Definitely.
We're juggling multiple hats.
That generational wealth is something that is a factor, and just adds to the obstacles that sometimes people face that aren't being considered whenever they apply to different opportunities, or just taking on, like you said, finding out what it takes to be a 501c3, you know? You already have so much else on your plate, let's add another thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. You are a part of a collective though, right? Go ahead.
So I started a writers collective in Tallercito. And so we've done, we had a writers conference through that. And I've gotten funding from the city for several projects to do the writers collective. And we actually were planning something for the fall, but that's on hold now. We were going to do the conference again this year. And I was trying to organize a book fair. Mm-hmm. But right now that's just going to be on hold until we can figure out like what everything is going to look like. But that's the collective that I started, and it's kind of been on the, we haven't done that much with it right now, but there's a group of writers and we've done several readings and organized different projects around the city around spoken and written word.
That's really, really cool to hear. What, in that work that you're doing, what communities do you tend to serve the most?
So it's POC. It's generally people of color. I mean, the spaces are open to anybody that comes in, but the focus really is on creating spaces that are for people of color, women especially. And I've done, when I do my events, any event that I do, it's always family friendly, because one, I know like logistically child care is expensive and it's not always accessible, but then I also feel like children deserve to grow up in these spaces.
Yeah,
and they're an important part of our community, so anything that I do is family friendly. Doesn't mean that it may be family appropriate, so parents are always kind of given advance noting that I don't censor folks, so if you're not comfortable with your children hearing certain things, then you know, you might want to just be ready to walk outside. But I think it's important for kids to grow up in readings, at art shows, conferences, things like that, just because one, it shows them that they're valued and that they're a part of our community. But two, I think it takes that, it just feels like home for them. And I think, I hope that when they're adults, they'll be less intimidated being in those spaces.
Yeah.
And so I think that's an important part of the work that we as community organizers need to do, is making sure that what we do is open and accessible for families too, for all of those reasons.
Yeah. Yeah, I've taken Emily to a couple of different meetings, and I wish that my mom had of done that for me, because like you said, it really does, it builds up your resistance to maybe not feeling welcome sometimes. So that way, you know, like, hey, City Hall is my house too, just as much as it is yours. I pay taxes in this city, I contribute, therefore my voice and opinion matters just as much as anyone else's. And that's something that I really want to stress to Emily, like you said, so that way she always feels comfortable no matter where she is and who might be around, even if she is maybe like the only female or the youngest person or anything like that, to always know like her voice matters. But who inspired you to do this kind of work?
I think that I've just been very fortunate to always have been surrounded by strong, especially strong women. Like, my mom is one of those, like I said, she would like drag us around to PTA meetings, and even though she didn't speak much English, she was always very active. And I come from a long line of women like that. My grandmother wasn't necessarily active in the community, but she was one of these women that was very strong, single mom back in the 60s, and just really kind of one of these very empowered women who, like, neighbors and family looked up to and was very wise. And so I grew up seeing them. And then I was just always very fortunate to have really good teachers too. Mm-hmm. Really good teachers that always took an interest in me. In high school, middle school, always. I mean, I was just very fortunate. And in college, when I went to Mountain View, the staff there just were really amazing and took us under the wings, because my parents didn't go to college. I mean, my parents have grade school education in Mexico, and I'm the oldest. And so the university kind of environment was something completely new to me. And but at Mountain View, I had a counselor who was amazing. I had mentors. We had a lot of brown women there who were a part of the community college, and they took us under their wings, and they mentored us informally, and always made sure that we knew what was what. And then when I went to Texas State, I transferred there for my bachelor's. Same thing there. I was very fortunate to have gotten involved with the, I was part of the Mecha group there, the Movimiento Estudiantil Chicano, the SLAN, and the mentors that we had there, and the advisors that we had, and professors there. We had a very close-knit group. And I mean, even after college, I've always been blessed to have people around me who I can not only look up to, but who are accessible and who are there when I have questions, and who just kind of take an interest in the folks around them.
That's awesome that you had those mentors that were willing to pour into you and your interests and your education, because like, not everybody has that, you know? So what a blessing.
No. Yeah, I realize that I've been very fortunate. I mean, I don't know if it's been like right place at the right time or what, but like Mountain View especially was so amazing for us. We had staff there that I would not have made it to Texas State if it weren't for the folks that were at Mountain View. And some of them I still see. One is a writer. She lives in San Antonio now, Barbara Renault Gonzalez. And I saw her actually, I was at a writer's conference in San Antonio, and she was one of the speakers, and I get to connect with her every so often. She's this amazing writer. And but I remember being a college student and her telling us like, no, you don't take shit from anybody. And she was actually one of the folks here in Dallas who we have the Latino Cultural Center because of her work with the Office of, I think back then it was still the Office of Cultural Affairs. But she was on the commission, and she did a lot of work back then. And she was one of the women that was always like, mija, this is what they're going to tell you, and this is how you do it. And so yeah, very, very fortunate. Yeah.
Yeah. What themes does your art typically address?
I focus a lot on just like everyday life. I always say like the little rituals, the everyday rituals that, when we're so busy, kind of running the rat race, we don't realize they're rituals, but it's those little, kind of everyday things that we do and the interactions that we have with people. I love to just people watch. Mm-hmm. And like last night, I was watering our plants, and it was pretty late, and I was sitting under our tree, and it was just like, I started thinking about this beautiful pecan tree, and I'm looking at it right now out of my window, and like all that it's given us, and our house is about 100 years old, and so the tree is probably about that old too, and every year we get like bushels and bushels of pecans, and it gives us shade, and mm-hmm. it protects like our yard from the rain, and it gives us so much. And so I started writing a piece, and I shared part of it on Instagram, and I'm going to write a little more on that, but just kind of noticing those little things that mm-hmm. That I think sometimes, like, as we're running through life, we don't notice those little things, and those are really the important things, because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, me running from point A to point B, I'm not going to remember that, but I'm never going to forget, like, the moments that I spend under this beautiful tree. And so just kind of trying to capture that, the beauty of everyday life, I guess.
Yeah, that sounds really wonderful. I've been trying to rewire my brain to appreciate those things that before I was thinking, it's too small to even acknowledge gratitude towards, you know? But I'm going through a homecoming journey, I guess, counseling, and it's been really great to try to like reprogram myself to notice and appreciate those things. And it sounds like your art like is just trying to shine a light on the things that people tend to forget or get forgotten, you know. That's great.
Yeah. And I have to do the same thing too, though, like reprogram myself. Like you said, that's a great word, because you get caught up. And I think if COVID has been good for anything, it's been that it's like, for me personally, and I know that I have a lot of privilege because we haven't had the issues with health or finance that a lot of folks are having. And so, I mean, I say that with a grain of salt and mm-hmm. but like for me personally, it's made me slow down again. Because I don't know, you get caught up sometimes in the work that you're doing, and then you do the work just to do the work. And so right now I'm not doing like some of the projects that I had planned for the summer and that had planned for the fall. And so it's given me an opportunity to just really sit back and kind of appreciate what I do have, and to look at the space that I'm in and really notice how much I had neglected, like mm-hmm. my immediate space, and been focusing on that and kind of trying to make myself reconnect with some things that I feel like I had really gotten disconnected from that are important. And so the writing actually, I have not written in, I'm kind of like an either or, so I'm either working on projects or I'm writing. Mm-hmm. And so because I was so busy working on projects, I hadn't really written much. Mm-hmm. And right now I've been kind of jotting down notes and taking pictures as prompts for pieces. And so I guess that's the good thing that's come out of all of this for me right now.
Yeah, finding that silver lining in a crappy situation. Yeah. Well, what are some of the challenges that you've faced, Ophelia, as an artist?
That kind of doubt and having hype myself up to be able to get out there. Because I am really introverted. I am like, I have a lot of social anxiety, and I'm really introverted. And
have you ever taken the Myers-Briggs? Have you ever taken
actually? Not in a long time. No? Yeah, it's okay. Been years since I've done that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm really introverted, and I'm very I have a lot of social anxiety, and I've over the years through counseling and through different things, I've learned like techniques to kind of fake it and to kind of calm myself down enough so that I can go out and do what I need to do. Mm-hmm. But I'm like a hot mess. Like if when I have to do presentations, I have to sit in my car. Even when I've done like the panel presentations for the city, which are like a 5-minute presentation, it's not anything that's really detailed. And they're for projects that I love and that are meaningful to me. But I have to sit in my car and like, okay, breathe and, or like go to the bathroom and like calm myself down. Kind of, you can do this. You got this.
Yeah, you too.
Come on, you here. Yay, Ophelia. You've got this. And,
you do.
And so that's a huge challenge for me. And like people are surprised sometimes, but like my anxiety is really, really bad sometimes. And so, and I think that coupled with like this whole idea of like, I'm not good enough and, I'm not prepared enough. I feel like I'm never prepared enough. And, that I think is probably one of like the bigger personal barriers that I face. And there's like all the systemic barriers that we deal with.
Yeah.
But on a personal level, that would probably be it.
Yeah. Introversion. I'm an INFJ. That's why I asked if you knew your Myers-Briggs. I can like fake being extroverted, yeah, but man, it really drains me and it stresses me out. And also I don't like the sound of my voice. So speaking up sometimes is hard for me. I have to tell myself in my head, okay, Victoria, you're going to count to three and you're just going to say it. Like 1, 2, 3, go. And I do that, but otherwise I'm just like, but I don't know. Yeah. The anxiety around public speaking is very real.
Yeah. And that's actually one of the same things that I do too, is like, I kind of go through the script in my head of like what I'm going to say and how I'm going to say it. And then, and kind of like walk myself through that. And then the other thing that I guess like is my motivator are my children. I always think like, okay, and I have to tell myself this all the time, like, okay, this isn't about you. It's bigger than you. Like when I need to speak up and I'm not comfortable speaking up, it's like, okay, you're doing this because you're trying to create a better world for your children. This is like,
just absolutely.
Get aside, breathe through this, and this is bigger than you. So,
And I've seen you in action at what was that? That Royal Blue Grocers community meeting. You know, I've seen you really speak up and speak out for the community when others weren't. And you know, with the representation that we have, voices like ours are definitely needed. So yeah, it's so good that despite that obstacle, you still do the work that you... Well, thank you so much for your time, Ophelia. We're basically at an hour, and so I'll go ahead and end it here. Final question is, would you like to share your social media handles with the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So on pretty much on everything, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, it's La Mex Mama. It's at La Mex Mama. And I think they're pretty much all the same. I have a website for Semillitas, the literary initiative that I have, and it's semillitasbookclub.com. And that's pretty much it right now.
This episode was hosted by Victoria Farrell Ortiz. Intro and outro composers/singers were Veronica Valera, she is a composer and vocals, Andrew Jackson, trumpet and sound editor, Autumn Graves, composer, guitar, and lead vocals. The sound editor for this episode was myself, Victoria. If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends, family, pelotero, everybody. Only you can prevent your history from being forgotten. That is on you. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Damahl Official. That's DMAHL Official. And like us on Facebook, leave a review, and stay safe out there. Hasta pronto.
pueden intentar robar mi casa, mi cultura y la bajada. Pero mi alma es algo que me niego a vender. Me niego.